All You Need to Know is brought to you by no one. No one at all.
Welcome to All You Need to Know, the show where you hear about everything and learn about nothing. Here are your hosts, Quinn Eaton and DJ Pig.
Welcome to this episode of All You Need to Know. My name is Quinn Eaton. No DJ Pig today, which that's been normal as of late, but DJ's very busy. No Isaac Bayer today. Instead, we've got the star of late bloomer golf, Thad Buchanan. Thad, what's going on, man?
What's up? Thank you for having me. I do think it's crazy that you preface every episode now with no DJ Pig. Like, you know, like okay, that's just a no-brainer.
You think I can omit that portion and just...
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind. I'll take note of that. But I don't want to talk about DJ and his absence. I want to talk about late bloomer golf. Now, this is... your undertaking. Would you say your outlet? Is this your, the portal into your life? Is that what people are seeing with this video series that you've got going on?
Yeah, I think they're seeing a conflict that has been brewing within me for the last several years of me trying to get better at golf while balancing my normal day-to-day life. Well, now I've quit my job, so now my life is golf. So now they're seeing a guy who's in his mid-20s, who should have his life figured out, not have his life figured out at all.
But at the same time, at the same time, though, you're kind of seeing it for those people that have tuned in. And I believe at this point, there are five episodes out there for people to consume at their leisure on basically anything, all you need to know, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. It's technically on Twitter, but it's just a link to YouTube, so that doesn't necessarily count. But it seems to me like it's you exploring, like you're exploring golf just as you are life, and so that simultaneous exploration is interesting as a viewer. And so I think myself, I'll speak for everyone when I say we're all very interested to see where this ends up. I'm very excited. I don't want to plug it too early, but I'm very excited to see if there will be some BGA-themed episodes of Late Bloomer Golf.
Definitely in the works. That's definitely a thing. I've actually considered, depending on – I'm working on a contract with my wife as my full-time camera person. Right now, she's asking a lot, especially with, you know, what she gave us for this last episode. I don't know if she's worth what she wants. I've considered, you know, getting her – someone to actually film every single shot of it, of at least one round of the BGA,
and have you personal follow, have you mic'd up, and just be able to live an entire round with you through the BGA. That would be a sight. I would actually love to see that. And the BGA, the Backyard Golf Association's championship, always has great coverage, but that would be more in-depth coverage than we've ever seen. There would be technically a documentary shooting as the tournament was progressing, so that's added pressure, but you are one to I feel like handle that kind of thing very well, so
absolutely
I'll be interested to see how that kind of works out coming up in the summer. And hey, a couple more late bloomer golf episodes and we'll be there, so I think a lot of people are counting down the days,
and while we're on it,
tentatively set for June, just for those that like to follow on the All You Need to Know socials.
And while we're on it, just before we get into the thing,
so just in case the audio didn't come in well there, he said
I can repeat.
Yeah, go ahead. Just in case, let's just do it one more time. Run it back. Yep.
B-E-A-R, maybe. Mm-hmm. When I find out who you are, I'm gonna beat the ever loving out of you.
Right. And Thad is referencing this is very deep. We're deep within the All You Need to Know experience here. Mm-hmm. There is someone, an unnamed person, leaving very nasty YouTube comments on Thad's videos, going by the name Bear, B-E-A-R. So we'll see how that plays out, but enough about late bloomer golf, even though I'd love to just talk about it the entire time. And enough about online. I mean, you're a co-host of today's episode, so you have the right to bring up some personal stuff, but I do want to slide towards our topic, which is one that I think will land well with people Because everyone's thought about this. Everyone has been driving and driven past a place and said, I just don't know how that place is open. Things of that nature. That's what we're discussing today, because there's really only one logical explanation for businesses and services like that. And that's what we're going to get into. We're going to unpack, and I'm very excited to go through some of these examples. So without further ado, this is episode 305. Today's topic, businesses that have to be money laundering fronts. All right, Thad, I'm not saying that you are a money laundering expert by any means, but for those uninitiated that don't know necessarily what it means to money launder, is there any description or example you could point people towards that would kind of help them better understand what we're talking about? And not necessarily the examples that we'll be discussing, but I'm thinking there's a good example in the show Breaking Bad, if people have seen that. But go ahead, I'll leave it to you. Money laundering, how does it work? What does it mean?
Well, Webster's Dictionary defines money laundering as the concealment of the origins of illegally obtained money, typically by means of transfers involving foreign banks or illegitimate businesses. So, you know, it's this conception of basically you have a front that you put up of a business or job, but that is the illegal making of money, either, like we said, through fraud, ways of fraud, or just, you know, breaking the law and usually using concealment of some sort.
And the thing that I was talking about for those Breaking Bad fans out there, Walter White, of course, making crystal blue meth, selling it,
that
and then
good sugar,
and then laundering that money from his drugs sales through a car wash business,
right?
Which is actually something that we'll talk about here in just a second. But basically, he is, I don't know, sliding money ever so discreetly through some of the actual profit loss stuff that is coming through the business. So right. You kind of use the front of the business to cover it up, which of course you read the Webster's Dictionary definition, and we're not going to get any better than that. So what we'll do now is move through some examples that Thad and I got together and said those of all the businesses out there, those have to be money laundering fronts without question. And I won't say that we didn't take some inspiration away from Breaking Bad with our first example. And I believe we've got seven or eight here to get through, and we've got plenty of time, which is great. But the first example that we do have is your car wash.
Right.
It's there. Most towns, if correct me if I'm wrong, Thad, have 3, 4, 5, 15 car washes within, you know, a certain radius.
Absolutely.
And anytime that I drive past a car wash, I'm not seeing a lot of people washing their cars. And I occasionally am seeing people using the vacuums, but most of the time, for the more upper echelon car washes, those are for free. Those are, you know, a courtesy offered by the business, which doesn't make that much sense to me either, because I can't tell you how many times I've pulled into a car wash place, vacuumed my car for free, and then left and never got my car washed. But your thoughts on the car wash being, you know, a perfect place for money laundering? Of course, we saw it as an example in Breaking Bad. Is there some truth to that, do you think?
Well, I just think there's a lot of suspicions around car washes. I mean, you have a business that is built on two things you can get easily and do yourself, water and soap. And you have a full-time business. You know, I can remember in school, some kids, you know, when I was in high school, other high school students getting jobs at these car washes that legitimately revolved around them sitting in a shed with a TV. And, you know, apparently they were making, you know, I don't know, $8 an hour when only four people came to the car wash a day. And that costs like $5 a person. So, you know, the money doesn't add up for it to be a profitable business based on that. Yeah. So there's a lot of weird stuff with that. How does a business, when there's competitors that involves just water and soap, establish itself for years to come? How does that happen?
And not only establish itself, but seemingly thrive, because anywhere that I've seen one car wash, there's four or five, And often there's some sort of franchise within those that expands to another location in a nearby town. And all of a sudden you've got all these, like Happy Suds car washes, and you're trying to figure out, okay, how much does it cost to build one of these things? Because some of them are fancy, right? I mean, some car washes you drive by, it's just kind of a almost a carport with a big hose that, you can walk around your car and basically power wash it. Others, though, you don't do anything. All you do, you pull in, you pull up to the little thing, or maybe there's an attendant there, and you decide, do you just want the regular wash? Do you want the premium? Do you want the premium plus wax and shine? Those are different things that you have to kind of juggle and figure out what you want to go with. Most of the time, I think people just go with that base model, and then you just line your tires up, put it in, I think, neutral,
Neutral, yeah.
and then you're through there. It's a conveyor belt, and your car is on it, and then you come out the other side, and your car is quote unquote washed. Now that has to a system like that has to cost, I have no idea, but thousands. I'm just maybe throwing out maybe a $60,000 to $100,000, right?
I would say that's close. And then what's strange is you see, a local school or something have their own car wash, and all of a sudden the entire world
Needs a
stops
wash.
for a day and gets a wash. And you're like, where are those people every day at this car wash? How is this car wash competing not only with other car washes, but a fundraiser every weekend? We're small kids who can't even like clean their own crack. They're getting more
Exactly.
business than the professional car washers that day for like a $4 difference.
And it's shocking, but I also think it's very revealing, because that right there shows you that, there is enough business, but why am I never seeing the car wash that just sits there all the time, backed up with, a ton of customers whenever, versus whenever you see the kids do a, hey, pull on over here to this abandoned restaurant, we'll wash your car for $5 type thing.
And the expensive ones you talk about, I mean, there's a period of time where when you go and get in that conveyor belt, it's darkness. I mean, no one, it's concealed location. The suds are everywhere. No telling what goes on in those cars or inside those washing areas when the flaps, when the plastic flaps drop, when the curtain goes over the rest of the world's eyes, the sudsy curtains, what is going on behind
Yeah,
it?
when those flaps start shaking, what's happening behind there? That's a great question. We don't have enough time to try to answer that, because we do have to move on to our next example that you brought to the table, which is a shoe cobbler or a shoe shiner. So you're thinking, and usually I will hold up my hand to God and say that I've never been to a cobbler. I've
Of
eaten
course.
some cobblers, and I love a good cobbler, but I've
Oh,
never been
yeah.
to a shoe cobbler. So how do you think they work into this money laundering scheme where, they're apparently making a ton of money, and they're not disclosing what they're actually doing to make that money?
Well, I think, if for those of you who are not aware of what a shoe cobbler is, shoe cobblers craft shoes, repair shoes. They work with leather quite a bit. And I just think in today's time, the concept of that just seems strange. I feel like there's not many people, staying in one pair of shoes and repairing it. You have things like Temu and Temu competing against each other. And those two places, of course, you can go get a Chinese shoe for 20, 30 bucks instead of going to a cobbler. I actually have an example of why, my personal example of why I brought this one up. I needed a book repaired, leather book, and I was looking online. Where can I go? And I saw something say, ask your local cobbler because they work with leather shoes. There's one in Murray. I called the cobbler. I don't know if they have titles, doctor, reverend, I don't know. Cobblers, master cobblers, I don't know. But
Master
I
Cobbler
called them,
sounds right.
master cobbler. I called them and I said, hey, I have a leather book. I need it like a either to be rebound or just a new leather cover, like a le leather covering over my cover. And he goes, dude, I only do shoes, man. And I was just like, that seems strange. Like, you are a master crafter of leather foot accessories, and you can't make me a book flap? Seemed quite strange to me.
Yeah, you'd also think, the cobbler business can't be doing that well. So if
To shoo
someone
me
were,
away, I know.
it
Yeah.
might have been the first call he had in months, and he probably got excited, had to, blow the dust off of his landline phone to answer your call, and then says, oh, sorry, I only do shoes. It feels like you're kind of putting yourself in a box there.
Yeah, and
Oh,
then
that's.
it wasn't like a crowd of people on the other side of the phone, and he's like, "We're just absolutely
Yeah.
slamming. I've been cobbling all day."
No, that's a good poll question. Are shoe cobblers ever swamped? I think that that's probably the answer to that is no. But the only problem I see with this one with the money laundering front is I feel like the business has to, not be suspicious, because if you see a car wash, and it brings in, I don't know, however, whatever would be good for a car wash, like let's say it just brings in,
30 bucks.
well, I'm saying $30,000 for the month
Yeah.
or something, and you would go, whoa, hey, how is that possible? Maybe they just had a really good month. If a cobbler had $20,000 come in a period of, let's say, 2 months, let's pump the brakes and go investigate this guy. That's the only issue that I see. Or, I said he or she. There can be female cobblers,
That's
of
true.
course.
Cobblers.
Cobblers, I think
Bless.
is the proper way to say it. But
I mean, and
that's the only issue I see there is, there's no way that they should be making a ton of money, so they have to be super careful if they are laundering money.
now how many people are just burning out their loafers every day? Because like, it's not like he's fixing Nike shocks, like, or
No.
pumps. Like, he's fixing like nice leather shoes.
And if someone, bust a hole in their, loafers or something, they're probably just going to go buy another pair. There's not
Right.
that's the American way now. It used to be, I'm going to keep this thing going for as long as I can. Now it's, oh, this served its purpose. I'm going to go buy something similar or the exact same thing and throw this away.
Right. Yeah. I just the old times of the cobbler seem to be coming to an end.
Yeah, especially if they can't fix a book. I mean, come on, look it up. If other cobblers are doing it, that cobbler's losing money.
I super glued went on. Like, you know how hard it was? I didn't have to go to master cobbling school or anything. I
And
did it.
that cobbler could have done the exact same thing, charged you $30, and said that he did some kind of fancy leather bound thing,
Right. What
and
am I gonna
you
do?
would have
Argue
known.
with a cobbler? I really still to this day don't know exactly what to do. He could
Exactly.
have
So
said jargon. I would have no idea what a cobbler really does.
the next one on our list is Chinese restaurants. Now, you also brought this one to the table. I have been to, my fair share of Chinese restaurants, and I'm assuming that you're saying this one because it's usually a very good product for the most part, Chinese food. You can't really go wrong for the most part. But then again, they're not charging you a ton of money
Right.
for their food. So is that kind of where this comes in? It's like, okay, why are they only charging me, $5 for this shrimp fried rice? Are they putting it in the books as they charged $8? And then that's how they money launder there.
Yeah, I mean, scenario, you go to a steakhouse, you order a $30 steak. It comes out and it's not that big of a steak. You ask, why is this a $30 steak? It's like, well, that's steak. Steak's expensive. It's a lot of money. And then you go to the Chinese restaurant down the road, you ask for pepper steak, and they give you so much steak that you don't even know. You
You're
gotta,
eating it for 3 or 4 days.
yeah, you're gonna eat it for so much food. And I really don't understand how other businesses haven't been put out of business by Chinese restaurants. I think it's because no one else uses the Chinese restaurant business model of just give them a lot for no money. Because people go and spend so much money for small portions. There's no way these restaurants are able to stay afloat with how much food they're dishing out. That or every other restaurant besides that one is a liar.
Yeah. Hey. You're preaching to the choir here. I'm sure there are a lot of people listening that agree with you. I want value whenever I'm going out to eat. And so if I choose a restaurant that I go out to eat at, and I think that it was fine, food was okay, but I didn't get a lot, I'm probably gonna say that was great and move on. I might not go back to that restaurant. Versus a Chinese restaurant, you're getting loaded down with as much rice as you can handle, with as much General Tso's chicken that you can handle, with as much, like you said, pepper steak. You're eating Chinese food in those little containers that they have, especially for, and apparently only for, Chinese restaurants. Those are in your fridge for 3 or 4 days, and you're eating on them, it seems like, all the time. It's like, is it Mary Poppins' bag that, she pulls a bunch of stuff out and it
Yeah.
never ends? It's basically the exact same thing with these Chinese food containers that that provide the food in. But the money laundering part, you think they're doing business well, and that's how no one is ever asking, like, okay, that doesn't seem like that number was right. for that month. We better look into their books.
It's just more of like a how is that place open today after they what seemed to look like, gave out thousands of dollars of chicken and yet had five people in there the whole day.
Yeah.
That to me, I feel like would incite suspicion.
And that's
Where are they getting it? What's the provider that has that chicken?
exactly.
Why isn't everyone getting from them if they're so dirt cheap? Makes
That's
no sense.
and it might be that might be a little unsettling. We might not want to know the answer to that question. Some things are best left, to be a mystery versus us kind of getting to the bottom of that and saying, oh no, now that I know, I don't think I'm going to go back. But to stay positive, you're right. Whenever I go into a Chinese restaurant, there's usually not a lot of people sitting in there. It might be more takeout oriented as far as restaurants go. Maybe that's why you're not seeing a ton of people in there. But then again, like you said, you could keep your eyes on a Chinese restaurant, I feel like, for a couple hours and not see a ton of people go in. You might even see more people come out, which doesn't make sense. But we'll move on.
A good point.
We tried to get to the bottom of Chinese restaurants and we kind of decided maybe we shouldn't. Let's just leave it there because we like them. The next one we have is bait and tackle shops. This one, without a doubt, is on the money laundering list. This might be a first team All-American money laundering business, the bait and tackle shop, because they're either all out of business or there's one holding on, and the people in there are doing quite well. That's what I've always noticed is, man, the fishing business must be good because these people look like they're doing quite well, and it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at a bait and tackle shop. That means you're a seasonal place, right? No one, at least in Kentucky, is going to the bait and tackle shop in December that I know of. There may be some, I don't know, winter fishing. I really don't know much about fishing. But you're a seasonal place. You have to be in a certain location, a certain clientele, and almost everything you're selling can be found in the ground.
Yeah,
So
it's
it's
true.
just the fact that with online today and all of those factors, how do we see a mom and pop, supposedly, bait shop still selling worms and rubber rigs that have been there for 30 years in the same packaging, and they've been there so long that the packaging is yellowed and you really can't even see inside the wrappers anymore?
Yeah.
Because they don't ever get rid of stuff in those bait and tackle shops. There's the
No.
same lures there than from World War II. Same
They're
lures.
not taking their unsold lures down to Goodwill, right? That
No.
they're keeping those things puppies on the shelf, and then at one point, they love the day that they can say vintage, put it in the vintage section,
Right.
and then charge double. But I can't get over the fact that if you do need, a jig from a bait and tackle stop shop, and you walk in there, you can get a six pack for $4, right?
Yeah.
So how are you keeping the lights on if someone can come in there, get a six pack of jigs, and be set for quite some time, and then like not come back until they need another six pack of jigs? Like clearly there are some fishermen and fisherwomen that are frequenting these locations. It just doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. And you're not, it seems like these places always have a really rusty cooler refrigerator up front where you can get, a soda for,
Yeah.
I don't know, 50 cents, a dollar, something like that. And still, it's like just charge a dollar 50 for that soda. Get with the
Right.
times. It seems like of all the stores that haven't gotten with the times, it's bait and tackle shops. And maybe it's the simplistic part and they like to stay in those simpler times. But then again, how are you making money? And I think people are going to start looking in. I think we're going to really raise some eyebrows with this list that we're bringing to the table.
There's a lot of refrigerators, a lot of containers. There's a lot of things to put a lot of illegal substances in a bait and tackle shop. Heck, you could put, I don't want to get morbid, but corpses in those places and no one would ever find them. Because it's like, oh, you got to have all these refrigerators for, I don't know,
Worms,
worms.
fish. Maybe.
It's not like a you go to a place and you get the thing on the back. Like if you're looking at a shelf of stuff, you get the second or third because you don't want the one on the front because that one's been touched the most or opened up the most, whatever, like a
Right.
closed something. So no one's going to the worm container and going to the back. They
No.
get the one closest to them. So who knows that back row of worms have ever been touched, ever.
And
They can't just be selling that many worms.
like you said, that little container of worms could be gathered on, a good 20-minute session one morning. You just go out in your yard, when the sun first comes up, pick up some worms and you're good to go. Instead, you're going in there to the bait and tackle shop, either buying worms or crickets or whatever you're using as bait. And I think as far as bait goes, the worms usually cost like if it per like if you went per jig versus per worm, the worms cost more. And don't hold me to that, but
Yeah.
it's just complicated. And with all these places that we're talking about, it simply doesn't add up. And another place that doesn't add up, or at least it seems like it doesn't, and we're talking about money laundering, how could we not talk about laundromats, right? Now,
Absolutely.
I've been to laundromats before. Of course, in rural areas, most people are, they just have their washer and dryer at their home. They don't need to, have access to any sort of, industrial sized washing machine or dryer. Occasionally you might, but it does seem like it's a more popular business in cities where people might not have access to their own washer and dryer. So those areas, it makes more sense. But then you go into, a little podunk town. Maybe you're just driving some highways, you're staying off the interstate, and it seems like every town that you drive through has, in a probably it's a strip mall, and the only store that's left in it is a laundromat, and it's still going. And those machines are probably older than Michael Phelps, I would say. I mean, I know that's kind of a rough guess, but I think he's 40 something.
Yeah, I was trying to mentally do that in my mind.
Like he these machines are old. There's no, I've seen a couple like franchise laundromats open up, I think. But for the most part, you're not seeing a mom and pop gather their money together and say, let's open a laundromat. There's not, I feel like, a lot of money there, yet these places stay open.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because I would normally say, how does that exist in the society to that we have today? But the premise of a laundromat, I mean, is you go to this and do your laundry there because you don't want to buy this expensive machine. Well, the machines are still expensive. So I guess it makes sense why they'd be around. But at the same time, like they're open 24/7. They don't ever use card. Most of the time, it's always cash,
Quarters.
bills, and quarters, which I feel like is very easy to move around and finagle with if you really need to. It's just the idea that business is going on at 3 a.m. there. It can be going on at 3 a.m. The lights can be on. You can drive by and think it's just a laundromat. It's open because it's a 24-hour business. But then you sit there and think, like, or is it posed as a 24/7 laundromat? Because what can be going on at 3 a.m.?
And to me, it's just if they have to pay, if one of their machines goes out, how are they making enough money to just pay for a replacement washer or dryer? That's what
Right.
I've always thought about, especially the older places that are still open. Because if it is quarters, I mean, I don't know what the rate is now, but I remember there were a couple times maybe our washer or dryer went out. We had to go up to the laundromat and take care of some stuff, and it's like a quarter for 30 minutes. Like how much are you
Yeah.
washing to bring in, that much? Like if you're only getting, let's say, $2 or $3 from each person, and you're having to pay for the building, you're having to pay for the machines and the upkeep and the water bill and the electricity bill from the dryers, and if it's gas, if there's any sort of thing like that, like it just doesn't, that's a, it seems like that's a for or a nonprofit. And by that I mean they're losing money every single month. It's kind of like
Yeah.
All You Need to Know. We're a negative profit company. We push out more than we bring in. As far as entertainment goes, though, we put out a lot. And
Oh,
there's
yeah.
entertainment from the production side as well. But getting back to the laundromats, it's one of those places where I don't think anybody would look into them because they feel bad. There's like, oh, they had a good month. Good for them. It's good
Yeah.
to see that they're kind of turning things around. And I'm by no means someone that understands how someone would get caught money laundering. Maybe that should disarm me from talking about this, but you have to think that the people that are looking at these businesses that are like, there's just no way that they're bringing in that amount of money, and laundromats has to be at the top of that list.
Yes, I agree 100%. I mean, the amount of stuff that can be left in a dryer unattended, walk away, what stops someone from opening up that dryer?
Yeah.
Grabbing something out of it, putting something in it. I guess the spinning could, but.
The spinning. Yeah. And literally, like, if you were to launder money at a laundromat, I mean, that's pretty ballsy.
Is putting money in a washer and turning on money laundering?
Not in the way that we're discussing it, but I see where you're making that connection. Not Webster's definition, no.
Okay.
Moving right along, this one we might be able to cover very quickly, trampoline parks. Now, these really boomed, it seemed like, maybe a decade ago, because everyone was buying their own trampoline death traps and putting them in their backyard. And then you soon found out, oh, that raises my house insurance, my homeowner's insurance. So maybe I'll just take my, you know, raucous kid to the nearby trampoline park, let him bounce around for an hour, and then take him home. So I can see where this one is like, okay, there's a lot of money on the front end to establish the trampoline park. You've got to, I guess, know how to put one of these things together.
Right.
But then I feel like it's tough to track, like, hey, you know, that trampoline park's still in business. I haven't seen a lot of people going in and out of that. It seems to me like it's just a more modern version of your roller rink that you don't see a lot of those anymore.
Right.
And so now here's a business that, you know, you could literally just buy a trampoline and put it in your backyard, yet somehow these are still chugging along in modern day.
Yeah, I mean, you're paying hourly to do something that I'm sucking wind in the first 15 minutes. No matter how excited I've ever been to go into one, 15 minutes of jumping, I'm sucking wind, right? You pay for the hour. I think it died out because of that quickly. But all of a sudden, yeah, you're seeing a place that is just, it feels like empty all the time. Maybe there's two kids in a corner with their parent bouncing. Mm-hmm. It's just utter silence. There's usually playing loud music to make it sound like there's lots of stuff going on.
Right.
But really, it's just one or two guys, grown men, just like seeing who can do the most backflips in a corner.
Are you implying that trampoline parks are pumping in stadium noise?
I do think that, absolutely. Okay.
I mean, that makes sense to me. I can't disagree with you, because anytime I've been to one, it's the same thing. Maybe there's a birthday party going on. Maybe that's how they do a lot of their business. But even if you're doing a birthday party, it's like more of a bulk price, like if you were going to Sam's and or Costco, you know, to each their own. But,
yeah,
you know, you're not getting that full price out of all those kids because you cut a deal for the party just so they could have it there. I don't know. Just one of those places that doesn't make sense. Balloons just went up on my screen again. I don't know why they do that. And I know this is an audio podcast, so it doesn't necessarily matter, but it did that last week as well. And Isaac and I could not figure out why it was doing that. But anyways,
that's terrifying.
Moving along, trampoline parks, question mark. That's what we'll say.
Yeah.
And another big question mark for me, I'm not going to name anything specific, and we're going to move through this one quickly as well. But there's a certain sandwich shop in Murray, Kentucky. And Isaac, if you happen to tune into this episode, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's a sandwich shop that's been, you know, at near Murray State campus for quite some time. It's the same situation. Place hasn't changed in years. You don't see a lot of people coming in and out of there, yet they're still somehow open. I just first instinct is that place is laundering money. That's usually the... Like, if I'm thinking that, how is someone else that is, you know, in charge of looking into these places not thinking that? Because it's pretty easy to drive around and see some of these places, especially that place with the color scheme that it has on their sign and building. You know, it sticks out. And what also sticks out is the fact that no one's going in there or coming out of there. Besides, it seems like one or two people, and I think they work there. So let's just keep it, you know. Murray, Kentucky, you know, sandwich shops, let's keep an eye on them. That's all I'm going to say. But
yeah, I've had a good sandwich there once. It's just one of those places you drive by it and you wonder, is that place still open? Is it closed down or something? And you even went there yesterday and you're asking that question. Yeah,
exactly.
It's the hours are like, you know, closed Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's, you know, closed 5 days a week. It's only open from 2 to 4 o'clock. Like, how does that
weird impact? Hours? Yeah, exactly. And I think we'll just leave it at that, because I don't want to get too specific. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. Of course, there are some people, I'm sure, that like that restaurant. But we'll finish by saying what has to be the biggest money laundering front of all businesses on this list, mattress stores. There's just no way that people are buying that many mattresses because think about it, Thad. You buy a good mattress, you're set for, if it's a good quality mattress, 6 to 10 years, maybe. I don't know how often some other people are buying mattresses or what they might be doing to wear out a mattress faster than that, but I'm just saying that it does not make sense for these mattress stores, especially now. The bed that I sleep on, I ordered off the internet and it got shipped to me in a box, and then it expanded once I opened that box. It just another place where it's like, okay, there's three mattress stores in this town, and there can't be that many people having to buy a new mattress. I understand maybe you would want to try out a mattress, and that's why those stores exist, but it still just doesn't add up.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the box mattress, I mean, now it's a whole fiasco to go to a mattress store. I got to make sure I have a big enough car to either take it with me or pay them to ship it to me when I could do that from the store itself, from an online store itself. I mean, how many people are just blowing out mattresses that often? The
Exactly.
whole point of the ones they make today is that they're long lasting.
Yes.
It's either a lie or there's money laundering
And
going
you
on.
would think for, if you're selling a product, you wouldn't want to promise that because you want customers to come back in. So why are they comfortable pushing that fact, hey, you don't need another mattress for a decade, when they kind of need people to come in and buy mattresses? It's they got to be money laundering. That's all we'll say. All these places that we talked about have to be money laundering fronts. We hope, if anything, this opened your eyes to some of the possibilities of money laundering, not to do it, but to identify places that could be doing it.
Absolutely.
So, Thad, thank you for your expertise on
Of
this
course.
topic. I think we did a really good job covering it. And that's going to do it for this episode of AY2K. My name is Quinn Eaton,
And I'm Thad Buchanan.
and this has been All You Need to Know.
This has been All You Need to Know. If you have a topic you would like to hear about, message us on Twitter or Facebook, or send us an email at allyouneed2know00@gmail.com. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And tune in every Wednesday, because here at AYN2K, we've got you covered.